Welcome back to the Deep Dive, the place where we really try to cut through the noise and get straight to the strategic core of today's most complex challenges. I'm Mel Vuxon, and today we are executing a mission, you could say, to secure the digital foundations of the United States government. Our Deep Dive title is Precise and Critical: Why U.S. Federal Agencies Should Adopt Reversing Labs to Meet Initiatives, Mandates, and Mission Requirements to Secure and Accelerate Speed to Mission. Quite a mouthful, but essential.
And I'm Tommy Parrison. It's great to be digging into this. You know, you hear that title, it sounds incredibly technical, maybe even a bit like jargon. But underneath it all, there's this really profound operational challenge facing the federal government right now.
Yeah, absolutely. The entire federal ecosystem, think Department of Defense, fielding new weapon systems, all the way to civilian agencies managing critical infrastructure, they're all kind of stuck between, well, a rock and a hard place, really.
That's a good way to put it. On one hand, you've got this non-negotiable requirement mandated right from the top to secure software supply chains. Huge pressure there. But on the other hand, there's this equally urgent tactical need to get technology acquired and deployed faster. You know, what the DoD often calls speed to mission.
And those two things, security and speed, they always seem to be fighting each other, don't they?
They really do. Because historically, security has meant friction. It's meant delays, mountains of compliance paperwork, slowing things down.
But we can't even start talking about these new mandates, these new pressures, without first going back to the event that basically, well, it burned down the old security playbook.
You have to talk about SolarWinds.
Yeah.
The catastrophic compromise back in 2020. And it's critical to understand, this wasn't just another hack. It wasn't a simple breach. It was a foundational crisis. It exposed this fatal flaw in the government's previous model for buying software, a model basically built on trust.
Let's unpack that SolarWinds lesson, because the type of attack, the distinction, it's everything here, isn't it? We weren't dealing with like a zero-day exploit in the wild or some forgotten line of insecure code someone missed.
Exactly right. For decades, especially when buying commercial off-the-shelf software, COTS, from big established vendors, the government operated on this kind of implicit trust. You trusted the vendor's reputation, you trusted their digital signature, you trusted their security certifications, you assumed they had it handled.
SolarWinds just shattered that illusion.
Completely. What happened was, sophisticated nation-state actors, they didn't just hack the operational network, they went deeper. They achieved this really sophisticated compromise of the vendor's build system, the system that actually compiles and packages the software.
So inside the factory, essentially.
Precisely. And they managed to inject a malicious backdoor, the Sunburst malware, into a perfectly legitimate software update. An update that was then digitally signed by SolarWinds, looked completely legitimate, and distributed to thousands of their customers, including, critically, many parts of the federal government.
Wow. That's the ultimate betrayal of the supply chain, isn't it? The poison was delivered through the trusted channel.
And the malware, Sunburst, it was hidden not in the source code where developers might have spotted it during reviews. No, it was inserted late in the process, embedded directly in the compiled binary, the actual software package that shipped.
So all the standard checks, they missed it.
Exactly. It bypassed all standard code reviews, standard testing, standard vulnerability scanning. Everything looked clean on the surface. And that specific type of attack, the tampering, the malware injection, the backdoor placement after the source code is written, that's what this whole regulatory tsunami that followed, EO14028 and all the rest, was designed to prevent.
Okay, so that sets the stage perfectly. Our mission for this deep dive, then, is to explore, really in granular detail, how one specific platform, Reversing Labs, is positioned to, well, to definitively close those systemic gaps. We need to understand how they bridge that chasm between just basic compliance, you know, ticking the boxes, doing the necessary paperwork, and achieving actual verifiable mission security.
And critically, Mel, we need to map out the strategy. We need to figure out who exactly across the vast federal government needs to hear this message. We're talking about the specific program executive offices, the PEOs, the CISOs, the authorizing officials, the people whose careers, frankly, depend on solving this problem.
Right. And show why Reversing Labs products aren't just another tool, but potentially their immediate high priority solution for achieving both security and that crucial speed to mission.
Let's get into it. So we have to start with the regulatory bedrock, you know, the rules that reshaped everything in federal IT after SolarWinds. The response was swift and massive. It really began with Executive Order 14028.
Okay, EO14028. If you're, say, an agency CISO listening right now, what's the absolute non-negotiable baseline requirement they're facing because of that order?
All right, let's break down this mandate stack because it's the foundation. EO 14028, Improving the Nation's Cybersecurity, came out in May 2021. That's the absolute starting point. It fundamentally mandated sweeping changes, things like agencies had to enhance software supply chain security, SSCS. They had to establish security standards for how software is developed. They needed to accelerate their move to secure cloud platforms and, crucially, accelerate the adoption of zero trust architectures.
Zero trust. That phrase is everywhere now. The core idea being...
Never trust. Always verify. Don't assume anything inside your network perimeter is safe. Verify everything. Every time. That's the heart of it.
But an executive order, that's often high-level policy, right? It sets direction, but it needs teeth. It needs mechanisms to actually force action.
Precisely. And that's where the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, stepped in. They're the ones who operationalized the EO. They made it real for agencies. Through OMB Memorandum M2218. That came out in September 2022. And it's the key operational requirement. It explicitly demands that software producers, anyone selling software to the government, they have to provide a formal self-attestation.
Oh.
Basically, a signed document saying their products follow secure development practices. And it specifically pointed to NIST guidance for what those practices are.
A self-attestation. That sounds significant. It shifts the burden, doesn't it?
Massively. It's a huge shift. The government, as the buyer, is now essentially contracting the burden of proof to the seller. They're saying, look, if you want to sell software to us, you must certify, you must attest that you built it securely according to these standards. The onus is on the vendor.
Okay, so if vendors have to attest, they need a guidebook, right? A how-to manual on proving they're secure.
That's where the National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST, comes in. It's specifically NIST Special Publication 800-218, the Secure Software Development Framework, or SSDF.
The SSDF. So that's the instruction manual for vendors.
Exactly. NIST SP 800-218 defines a whole set of practices across four key groups. Prepare the organization, protect the software, produce well-secured software, and respond to vulnerabilities. Now, the entire framework is important, but the practice group most relevant to preventing another SolarWinds-style attack, the kind of attack we're focused on, is protect the software.
PS. Protect the software. What does that entail?
The PS practice group mandates things like verifying the integrity of the software throughout its lifecycle, protecting software components from unauthorized access or tampering, and, crucially, ensuring the build environment itself, the place where the software is compiled and packaged, is secure from tampering. It's demanding proof that the final product wasn't poisoned along the way.
Okay, demanding proof of integrity. This brings us right to what you call the systemic gap, the great disconnect. We have these mandates demanding checks against active threats like tampering and malware injection. But what are the tools that agencies have traditionally relied on actually finding?
This is where it gets really interesting. And frankly, quite dangerous from a national security perspective. Your traditional application security tools, the ones most agencies have invested heavily in, they're primarily designed to find vulnerabilities.
Vulnerabilities, meaning mistakes, flaws.
Generally, yes. Think of static application security testing, SAS. That scans the source code for bugs, coding flaws, insecure patterns. Sort of like checking the quality of the recipe. Then you have software composition analysis, SCA. SEA tools scan for known publicly disclosed vulnerabilities, CVEs, in the open source components used in the software. They basically check the component's name or maybe a known hash against a big database of known problems, like checking if any of your listed ingredients have known safety recalls.
So SEA looks for mistakes in the custom code. SEA looks for known flaws in the third-party ingredients.
Correct. They're looking for things that were mistakes made during development or known weaknesses in libraries that need patching.
The attacks that really drove these mandates, the big ones like SolarWinds, 3CX, CodeTech at Fall, they weren't just mistakes, were they?
No, absolutely not. That's the critical disconnect. Those high-profile breaches weren't caused by overlooked vulnerabilities or simple coding errors. They were caused by active threats. We're talking malware, backdoors, malicious features that were intentionally inserted into the software, often very late in the development or build process. These are acts of sabotage, not accidents.
So it's the ISO. They could get a report from their SAST and SCA tool saying everything's clean. No known CVEs, no major coding flaws found.
Precisely. They can get a 100% clean bill of health from those traditional tools. The reports look great, compliance boxes ticked. And yet, the actual compiled software package they received could be a malicious Trojan horse, just like SolarWinds was.
Wow. That must create a terrible paradox for that federal CISO, right? They feel like they're doing the right thing, running the stands, meeting the compliance process requirements.
Right.
But They're fundamentally blind to the actual threat. The White House, the OMB, NIST, everyone is telling them they absolutely must stop.
It's worse than a paradox. It's a dangerous false sense of security. They've checked the vulnerability boxes. Maybe they feel compliant, but they've completely failed the integrity test. SASE and SCA, they mostly operate at the source code level. They implicitly assume the build process itself is trustworthy.
But SolarWinds proved it isn't always.
Exactly. When the build pipeline itself is compromised like it was in SolarWinds, those source code focused tools are rendered almost useless against that specific sophisticated type of attack. They're meticulously examining the ingredients list while the enemy is poisoning the punch bowl after everything's been mixed. They just can't see it.
This leads us perfectly to the software bill of materials, the SBOM. You know, CISA mandated the SBOM, intending it as a necessary inventory of software components to increase transparency. The idea seems good on paper.
The intent was good. Transparency is important and inventory is necessary.
But why is the SBOM, as it's often being implemented today using those same legacy tools, often becoming just another piece of compliance paperwork? Why the checkbox exercise critique?
Because the SBOM by itself is just an inventory list. It's necessary, but it's not security assurance. The critical failure is what we call the SBOM gap, compliance versus validation. Standard tools that generate or consume SBOMs often only validate the name of a component, or maybe the hash if it's a well-known clean version. They confirm that a component with that name exists in the software package, but they don't, and often can't, validate that the specific file sitting right there in front of you is actually safe and untampered with.
Okay, let's make that failure really concrete. Can you walk us through an example, maybe a federal agency buying some SOFON's software?
Sure. Let's imagine a program executive office, a PEO, within the Army. They're procuring a new piece of operational technology software from a commercial vendor. The vendor provides an SBIOM, maybe in Cyclone DX format, as required. It lists all the components, including, let's say, log4j2.14.0.jar. That's a real known version of a common logging library.
Okay, so the PEO's compliance team gets this SBOM. They check the box, received SBOM. They're compliant with that part of M2218.
Right. Then maybe their traditional SCA tool scans the software package. It sees the file name log4j2.13.0.jar. It checks its database. The database says, okay, version 2.13.0 at this moment has no active critical CVEs associated with it. So the tool gives a green light. The AO, the authorizing official reviewing the reports, feels comfortable. Looks good.
But the sophisticated attacker, the nation-state actor who pulled off SolarWinds, they aren't necessarily going to use a component with a known CVE, are they? And they don't change the name of the file.
Exactly. That's the crucial point. The attack scenario is much simpler and much harder for traditional tools to catch. During the vendor's internal build process, maybe that build server was compromised. The attacker simply swaps the clean, legitimate log4j2.13.0.jar file for a malicious version. This malicious version looks identical on the surface, same file name, maybe even the same size or metadata, but it contains a hidden backdoor, extra malicious code injected by the attacker.
So the SBOM still lists log4j2.14.0.jar.
Correct. The inventory is technically accurate according to the file name.
And the SCA tool sees the name log4j2.1.0 and checks its vulnerability database.
And clears it, because the name corresponds to a version currently considered safe from known CVEs.
But the critical security question remains completely unanswered.
Completely. That question is, has this specific file, the one actually included in the software package we just received, has it been tampered with? Does it contain embedded, unauthorized malware that wasn't in the original legitimate library?
And the standard tools just can't answer that.
They can't. The federal agency validated the name on the list, but they failed to validate the integrity of the actual binary component. They have the compliance paperwork, the SBOM, the clean SEA report, but potentially zero actual assurance against a sophisticated supply chain attack.
It really feels like the entire federal security framework, as mandated, is missing a crucial final step, like an independent check, a definitive, maybe forensic assessment of the final compiled software package before it ever touches a sensitive network.
That's precisely the systemic gap. The gap reversing labs was fundamentally built to fill.
Okay, so if the existing tools, the ACE-ST and SCA that everyone uses, are essentially blind to these active threats hidden in the binary, what does the platform designed to deliver that critical final exam actually look like? How does it work?
Right. That platform is reversing labs. And its core differentiator isn't just, you know, a slightly better version of the old tools. It's a fundamental technical shift. It's centered on what they call AI-driven complex binary analysis.
Okay, complex binary analysis. So we're shifting the focus away from the source code, the recipe, as you called it, and looking directly at the final compiled product, the binary. Why is analyzing the binary itself so fundamentally different? And why is that the key to catching these SolarWinds-style attacks that slip past the other tools?
Think about it with that baking analogy again. Source code is the recipe. The binary is the final baked cake. If a malicious baker secretly swaps out, say, clean sugar for something toxic during the mixing process after you've already approved the recipe,
you wouldn't know just by rereading the recipe.
Exactly. You'd only detect the poison by actually, forensically, examining the final cake itself. Reversing Labs analyzes the final compiled software binary, the actual artifact that gets installed and executed on computers. It's the ground truth. It serves as that required final exam after all the development, integration, and packaging steps are supposedly complete.
Okay, but binaries. They're complex, right? They're often opaque, maybe proprietary formats, huge files sometimes. How can you analyze them effectively at scale? And critically, how do you do it without forcing the vendor to hand over their secret source code, which they'll never do for COTS software, and without actually running the code, which will be incredibly risky if it is malicious?
That's the core of their proprietary innovation. Reversing Labs uses a specialized engine, honed over like 15 years now, focused specifically on deep disassembly and recursive unpacking of software packages. This engine is designed to rapidly deconstruct really complex packages, things like installers, archives, firmware images, mobile apps, you name it. It recursively unpacks them layer by layer, can handle over 400 different file formats, and identify over 4,800 specific file types within those packages.
Recursively unpacking, meaning it digs down through all the nested containers.
Yes, exactly. It keeps digging deeper and deeper into the structure. And the crucial part is, it does all of this analysis statically, without executing any code. It's pre-execution analysis. This gives them near 100% visibility into the actual contents of that final build artifact.
Yeah.
It lets them look deep inside proprietary components where source code scanners simply cannot go because they don't have the source.
Okay, that's impressive tech. So let's connect it back to the threats. What specific mission-critical threats does this deep binary analysis catch that the AST and SCA are fundamentally blind to? Give us the top three.
Okay, the top three threats it catches are precisely the ones that motivated EO 14028 and the subsequent mandates. Number one, malware and backdoors. Things like the Sunburst malware and SolarWinds. Malicious payloads embedded deep within an otherwise legitimate component, whether it's proprietary or open source. Injected during that compromised build process. SAST can't see it because it only looks at the source code before the build. SCA can't see it because it only checks the known name or hash of the original clean component. Only deep binary analysis can actually find those malicious instructions hidden inside the final compiled file.
Makes sense. What's number two?
Number two, tampering and integrity failures. This means detecting unauthorized modifications to the application structure or code, or finding evidence that the compiled binary doesn't actually match the expected components listed in the SBOMA, or that it wasn't built correctly according to a reproducible build process. These are the telltale signs of a supply chain attack, or maybe just a dangerously broken build process.
And number three?
Number three, exposed secrets actually baked into the binary. This is a big one. We're talking about things like developer credentials, hard-coded API keys, private certificates, or even sensitive proprietary data. Stuff that might have been referenced loosely in the source code, but got compiled or packaged directly into the final binary format. Source code scanners often miss these, especially if they're embedded late in the process or obfuscated. But finding them in the binary is critical because deploying that binary means deploying those secrets, creating a massive operational risk.
Okay, malware, tampering, secrets, all found by looking at the final binary. That clearly addresses the core vulnerability versus active threat gap we talked about. Now let's look at the specific Reversing Labs product that puts this capability into action for federal buyers. That's Spectre Assure, right? We discussed the critical SBOM gap, how standard SBOMs are just lists. How does Spectre Assure go beyond the SBOM with something called the Safe Report to provide the actual assurance that authorizing official needs?
Right. Spectre Assure is the flagship product specifically tailored for software supply chain security use cases, both buy safe and build safe, which we'll get into. And yes, it absolutely generates industry standard comprehensive SBOMs. It supports CycleNDX, SPDX formats, fulfilling that basic compliance requirement from M2218. That's table stakes now. But the real value, the strategic differentiator, is the Safe Report.
Safe Report. What is that exactly? How does it differ from, say, a standard SCA report that just lists CVEs?
Think of it as the difference between a simple inventory checklist and a full forensic analysis report. The SAFE report takes the inventory provided by the SBOM and adds that crucial missing assurance layer. It provides a full risk assessment based on the deep binary analysis of the software package's integrity. It's designed to be that single, definitive, defensible artifact to the authorizing official, the AO, or the CISO. It consolidates all the evidence.
What kind of evidence?
It includes findings from, I believe, 16 proprietary malware detection engines that Reversing Labs runs against the binary's components. It explicitly identifies those three critical threats we just discussed. Any embedded malware or suspicious behaviors, any signs of tampering or integrity issues, and any exposed secrets, with a special focus on prioritizing things like active software as a service credentials or cloud API keys, which are huge risks. The report is designed to be definitive, not ambiguous, like many vulnerability reports. It gives a clear risk posture.
And you mentioned earlier it helps address security remediation fatigue among development teams. That's a huge issue, developers getting overwhelmed by alerts. How does Spectra Assure streamline their work instead of just adding another tool, another set of alerts?
Yeah, that's a key design principle. The SAFE report provides clear SAFE levels, basically, an overall score indicating the assessed risk, and importantly, a prioritized remediation roadmap. So instead of just flooding the DevSecOps team with potentially thousands of low-priority CVE alerts from an SCA tool, which is exactly what causes that alert fatigue and makes developers tune out security.
Right. They just start ignoring them.
Exactly. Spectra Assure intelligently prioritizes the risks it finds based on severity, exploitability, and especially active threat detection from the binary analysis. It gives the development and security teams a clear, actionable, non-disruptive path for leveling up their software's security posture. It tells them, focus on these specific high-priority issues. First, the malware, the critical secrets, the tampering. This ensures the remediation efforts translate directly into measurable risk reduction, making the whole process much less disruptive to the high velocity required by federal software factories. Focus on what actually matters most.
Okay, so this level of decisive, high-fidelity analysis, especially the malware detection and prioritization, it must rely on some serious intelligence gathering, right? A massive database of threats.
Absolutely. That brings us to the powerhouse behind the platform, Spectra Intelligence.
Spectra Intelligence, the engine room, you called it.
Yeah, or maybe the indispensable Rosetta Stone for understanding every file encountered. Spectra Intelligence is Reversing Labs' threat intelligence repository and infrastructure. And it's vast. It is currently the world's largest commercial threat repository, tracking metadata and analysis results for over 422 billion searchable files.
Good and bad.
422 billion files. That's a staggering number. Mm. But most threat intelligence feeds, most repositories, they focus on the bad stuff, right? Mm. Malware signatures, malicious IPs. What's the unique differentiator for Spectra Intelligence, especially thinking about its impact on federal SOC operations? That's a great point. The truly unique differentiator and what makes it so powerful for operations is its massive goodware database. It's not just a malware database. It's arguably the industry's largest and most comprehensive repository of known good, legitimate files and their detailed reputation information, including all the different versions, patches, variants from legitimate software vendors.
Goodware. Why is knowing what's good so critical for Federal Security Operations Center, SSOC? Don't they mostly care about finding the bad?
They absolutely care about finding the bad. But think about their biggest operational problem day to day. It's alert fatigue and the sheer time spent manually investigating suspicious but ultimately benign files.
Okay, run us through a quick scenario. How does having this massive goodware database actually change an analyst's workflow?
Okay, imagine you're a SOC analyst at, say, a Department of Energy National Lab. You're monitoring systems protecting critical research or infrastructure. Your existing CM, maybe Splunk, maybe Sentinel detects some activity. It flags a new configuration file or maybe a component that was just updated through a legitimate patch. Something looks slightly unusual.
Okay, standard procedure time.
Right. Pre-Reversing Labs, that analyst gets this ambiguous alert. Maybe it has a low confidence score, maybe just a suspicious file. What do they have to do? They have to spend hours, sometimes literally a full day per alert, manually triaging it. They have to pull the file safely, maybe try to run it in a sandbox environment, check it against multiple different, often low-fidelity threat feeds. They might have to escalate it for deeper analysis. All this manual effort, this constant noise from investigating legitimate files or low-priority alerts, means they inevitably miss the truly important, sophisticated threats that need immediate attention.
They're swamped. Okay, so now how does it work post-implementation with Spectra Intelligence enriching their SIEM?
With Spectra Intelligence integrated, that analyst receives a high-fidelity verdict, often instantly, right there in their SAM alert. If the file is definitively malicious, based on Reversing Labs' deep analysis and massive threat database, they know immediately, high confidence. They can initiate containment and response actions much faster, significantly reducing the mean time to respond, or MTTR.
And if the file isn't malicious?
That's where the Goodware database is gold. If the file is 100% known good, meaning it's already been analyzed, classified, and vetted by Reversing Labs' massive Goodware repository, that entire manual investigation process is eliminated completely.
The alert gets automatically closed or deprioritized.
Exactly. This authoritative classification of both known good and known bad files eliminates the vast majority of false positives and low-value alerts. This directly translates into, as the outline said, slashing costs and supercharging efficiency. It allows those highly skilled SOC teams to focus their scarce time and resources entirely on investigating and responding to the real sophisticated threats, not on endlessly vetting legitimate software patches or benign files.
That seems like a massive operational benefit. Okay, beyond the core supply chain products, Assure and Intelligence, the platform also includes some more specialized tools, right? For high-volume environments and deep forensics.
That's right. There's Spectra Detect and Spectra Analyze.
Spectra Detect, what's its role?
Spectra Detect is engineered for enterprise-scale, high-speed file inspection across the entire environment. Think about large federal networks, especially in agencies like the DoD or DHS. They process millions of files every single day. Files coming in through email gateways, web proxies, flowing across the network, residing on endpoints. Spectra Detect provides the high-volume, continuous monitoring and inspection needed to achieve the kind of comprehensive asset visibility required by mandates like CISA's Binding Operational Directive 2301. It's about ensuring threats aren't slipping through simply because of the sheer volume of data flow, catching things in transit or at rest at scale.
Got it. High-volume inspection. And Spectra Analyze, you mentioned it's for forensics teams, maybe the IC. What makes it special?
Spectra Analyze is essentially the instant malware lab. It's a full-featured threat analysis workbench designed for advanced users, dedicated malware analysts, digital forensics, and incident response, DFIR teams, threat hunters. It gives them all the deep dive tools. But its most critical feature, especially when we're talking about Tier 2 federal agencies, specifically law enforcement like the DOJ and FBI, or parts of the intelligence community, is its privacy controls and flexible deployment options.
Privacy controls. Why is that feature so absolutely non-negotiable for those specific agencies?
It boils down to legal compliance and classification requirements. Agencies like the FBI or certain components within the IC routinely handle evidentiary files. These are files that are critical evidence in an ongoing criminal investigation or maybe counterintelligence operation. Or they might be files classified at top secret SCI or higher.
And they can't just upload those to a commercial cloud for analysis.
Absolutely not. Under no circumstances can those sensitive files be uploaded to a public, third-party cloud service for analysis. It violates legal chain of custody rules, classification policies, everything. It's a hard stop. Spectra Analyzes explicitly addresses this. It allows those teams to deploy a private, completely air-gapped, on-premise instance of the analysis workbench.
So they maintain full control.
Total control and custody of those sensitive files while still leveraging Reversing Labs' powerful analysis capabilities locally. This ability to operate in a fully private, disconnected mode fulfills that critical must-have requirement for deploying the tool in those highly sensitive investigative and intelligence environments. Frankly, this privacy feature alone is often the key that unlocks the door for forensics contracts within the DOJ or parts of the IC.
That shows a really deep understanding of not just the tech, but the specific regulatory and operational constraints of different federal customers. Okay, we've clearly established the systemic gaps in federal security, the limitations of old tools, and the specific Reversing Labs technology built to close those gaps. Now let's bridge the gap ourselves. How do we translate this abstract technology discussion into concrete mission-accelerating capabilities? Let's look at those four critical pillars of federal software assurance you mentioned.
Right. The real impact comes when the technology directly solves an operational problem that's hindering the mission. And these solutions, using Reversing Labs, they really crystallize into four key pillars, four main ways they help federal agencies.
Okay, let's start with pillar one, secure acquisition by safe. This is all about vetting commercial off-the-shelf, COTS, and other third-party software before it gets deployed. This seems like the immediate post-SolarWinds priority number one.
It absolutely is. The core challenge here was that traditional acquisition relied on slow, often shallow, vendor questionnaires. Basically, asking the vendor, are you secure? And hoping they said yes and were telling the truth. It was based on that implicit trust model that EO 14028 sought to destroy.
And the mandate's pushing for change here.
The key mandates are NIST SP800-161, which covers cyber supply chain risk management, CSCRM, and also specific guidance from CISA on secure software acquisition practices. They all demand verification, not just trust.
But the big technical barrier for Kite software is always the lack of source code, right? Vendors guard that fiercely, so traditional SaaS tools are useless for vetting purchase software.
Exactly. That's been the Achilles heel of CIOS's security assurance. Vendors won't give you their proprietary source code, so you couldn't use the standard tools to check it.
So how does Reversing Labs overcome this fundamental barrier? How does it enable a true verify, don't trust strategy, even for black box CO test software?
This goes back to the core technology. Spectra assures ability to analyze the final binary without needing the source code. This capability single-handedly unlocks the entire third-party software risk management TPSRM use case for proprietary software. For the first time, the federal buyer, the agency acquiring the software, gains independent objective visibility into the actual integrity and security posture of a proprietary application before they deploy it onto their networks.
They can just take the installer package, the binary they received from the vendor, run it through Spectra Assure.
Exactly. Scan the compiled COTS product they intend to buy, and Spectra Assure will immediately detect if there's hidden malware, unauthorized components swapped in, dangerous exposed secrets baked into the binary, all the things SaaS miss.
Okay, that's powerful verification. But connect it back to the other critical objective, speed to mission. How does adding this deep scan actually accelerate things rather than slowing them down with another security check?
Because it replaces a much slower, less reliable process. It means dramatically accelerated acquisition approvals. Quantifiably, we've seen Spectra Assure reduce the time required for the security review and approval for a new CIOS software package from several weeks or even months, time spent generating, sending, receiving, reviewing, maybe disputing vendor paperwork and questionnaires, down to just a few hours.
Hours instead of weeks or months.
Yes. We're talking about potentially a 1,000% increase in efficiency, as the outline noted, in that specific vetting and approval process. So instead of security being the bottleneck that slows down acquisition, this kind of binary assurance actually accelerates it by providing definitive, trustworthy proof of integrity much, much faster. That is tangible mission velocity, getting capabilities deployed sooner, safely.
Okay, pillar one, buy safe, accelerated COTATS vetting. Let's move to pillar two, secure development, build safe. This is about securing the software the government builds itself, often within these rapidly expanding DevSecOps pipelines or software factories, especially in the DoD and places like GSA.
Right. The government is becoming a major software developer itself. The challenge here is that security tools have a notorious reputation for creating friction in these high-speed environments. Mm. They slow down the development velocity. That's the whole point of DevSecOps and continuous integrated continuous deployment, CICD.
Friction is the enemy. And the mandates driving security into these pipelines.
Here, the primary drivers are NIST SP800-218, the SSDF, which dictates secure development practices, and again, OMB M2218, which requires the self-attestation that those practices are being followed, even for internally developed software in many cases.
And the critical risk isn't just flaws in the code the developers write, right? It's the pipeline itself.
Exactly. The CICD pipeline itself is a prime target for sophisticated attackers. We saw this with the CodeCop breach, where attackers compromised a build tool to inject malicious code downstream. If the build script or a packaging tool or any part of that automated pipeline is compromised, then every piece of software that flows through it could be tainted, regardless of how clean the original source code was. SAST SEA scanning the source code wouldn't catch that pipeline compromise.
So Spectra Assure needs to fit into that pipeline seamlessly. Acting as a check without causing that dreaded friction.
Precisely. It's designed to act as the final quality and integrity gate. It gets integrated right at the end of the CI/CD pipeline, typically after the build and packaging steps, the moment the final binary artifact is produced. By scanning that final output, it verifies the integrity of the entire process that came before it. It ensures that no malicious build script, no compromised compiler or third-party library fetched during the build, managed to inject malware or backdoors into the final compiled software.
And how does it avoid slowing developers down? How is it less disruptive, as you mentioned?
Because of the high fidelity intelligence and the safe levels prioritization we talked about earlier, it doesn't flood developers with thousands of low priority vulnerability alerts about theoretical code issues. It focuses their attention laser sharp on the actual high-risk threats found in the final binary confirmed malware, definite tampering, critical exposed secrets. This drastically reduces the alert noise that typically plays developers using only SAS Secia, allowing them to maintain high velocity while addressing the most significant risks.
Okay, less noise, focused alerts. And how does this help the DevSecOps lead with the crushing compliance burden, generating all that documentation for the AO?
The compliance automation aspect is a massive relief for those teams. Spectra Assure automatically generates validated machine-readable SBOMs for every build. That's a huge time saver right there. And critically, it generates those continuous safe reports, providing the ongoing, verifiable evidence needed to prove adherence to the SSDF practices. This evidence is exactly what the AO needs to see for the M2218 self-attestation, and especially for enabling continuous ATO. It effectively turns what used to be a painful, manual, documentation-heavy chore at the end of each release cycle into an automated, continuous process built right into the pipeline that directly supports the government-wide push toward continuous ATO.
Okay, that makes sense. Let's transition now to Pillar 3, Secure Operations, Stay Safe. This is about accelerating the work of the teams on the front lines. The Security Operations Centers, SOCs, and the Digital Forensics and Incident Response, DFIR teams. Their biggest challenge seems to be just drowning in data and alerts. Overwhelming volume, constant alert fatigue.
The sheer scale of data flowing through federal networks is staggering. That's the core challenge. And the mandates, particularly things like CISA's BOD 23001 on improving asset visibility and detection, require continuous improvement in monitoring and response capabilities. So the solution has to be able to handle potentially millions of files flowing through the environment every single day without choking.
And that's where Spectre Detect comes in.
Yes. Spectre Detect is the engine designed specifically for that enterprise-scale, high-volume inspection. It provides the pervasive monitoring needed to achieve that required visibility across all the potential entry points and resting places, from malicious files, endpoints, network traffic, email, web, cloud storage, you name it. It's about catching threats hidden within that massive flow.
Got it. But specifically for the SOC analysts trying to improve their response times, their mean time to respond, MTTR, they're often already using big platforms like Splunk or Microsoft Sentinel. How does adding Spectre Intelligence specifically help them get faster and more decisive?
It acts like an authoritative oracle integrated directly into their existing workflow. SOCs typically integrate Spectre Intelligence to enrich the alerts popping up in their CIEM or SOAR platform. So instead of getting an alert with maybe a low confidence score based on some heuristic rule or just suspicious file found, they get a decisive high-fidelity threat verdict directly from reversing labs, backed by that massive 422 billion file repository and deep analysis.
High fidelity is the key.
Absolutely. It eliminates the guesswork and the uncertainty that plagues SOC analysts dealing with ambiguous alerts. If Spectre Intelligence says a file is known bad, they can trust it with high confidence and initiate response actions immediately. And equally importantly, if it says a file is known good, they can trust that too and instantly dismiss the alert, avoiding wasted investigation time. This ability to cut through the false positive noise and rapidly identify true threats is what dramatically improves MTTR. It lets analysts take immediate decisive action instead of spending 90% of their time investigating benign events.
Okay, stay safe. Better visibility, faster response. Now for the final pillar, which you hinted might be the most impactful for mission speed, especially in DoD, Pillar 4. Secure mission, accelerate safe, continuous ATO. See ATO. The traditional authorization to operate process. It's legendary for being a bottleneck, right? Slow, paper-based, hindering deployment.
Well, the traditional static ATO process is a relic of a bygone era, frankly. It's typically a point-in-time assessment, mm-hmm. resulting in a massive binder full of paperwork, maybe security scans run once, vendor checklists. This snapshot of risk is taken at a specific moment.
Mm.
And the whole process to get that signature can take months, sometimes even years. Years. This is a completely untenable when you need to rapidly deploy updated software, safer technology, new capabilities to warfighters or critical systems.
And the DoD is pushing hard to change this.
Very hard. There's a top-down directive across DoD, driven by senior leadership and initiatives like Software Fast Track, SWFT, demanding a move away from static ATOs towards continuous ATO, CKATO. The idea behind CATO is an ongoing authorization to operate, based on continuous monitoring, continuous risk assessment, and continuous risk acceptance by the authorizing official.
But that sounds like a huge cultural shift, especially for the authorizing official, the AO. They're the ones signing on the dotted line, holding the personal liability if something goes wrong. How do you convince an AO who's used to that 800-page binder, even if they know it's flawed?
That is absolutely the crux of the cultural and technological shift required for Cato.
Mm-hmm.
The AO needs constant, trustworthy, verifiable evidence, not just more paperwork that's outdated the moment it's printed. And this is where Spectre Assure becomes the critical technological enabler for Cato. It's designed specifically to provide that evidence stream. By being integrated into the DevSecOps pipeline for BuildSafe, or used for continuous vetting of cards for BuySafe, Spectre Assure automates the generation of the highest quality verifiable evidence about software integrity. We're talking about those continuous safe reports, the validated SBOMs, the detailed findings on malware, tampering, and secrets. This isn't subjective opinion, it's objective binary level proof of the software's security posture generated automatically and continuously.
So the AO gets a live feed of risk data.
Essentially, yes. This continuous flow of objective risk data integrated directly into their risk management dashboards or authority chain tools gives the AO the confidence and, critically, the verifiable audit trail they need to make that leap. It allows them to transition from relying on a static signature based on old data to granting and maintaining an ongoing authorization based on real-time evidence-based risk assessment. This mitigates their personal risk because the decision is backed by continuous automated verification.
So reversing labs isn't just a security tool in this context.
No, in the context of Cato, it becomes a mission velocity platform. It directly removes one of the biggest historical roadblocks to rapidly deploying secure software, providing the AO with the assurance needed to say yes faster and keep saying yes as long as the evidence shows the risk remains acceptable.
That directly connects the technical capability binary analysis to the most critical operational objective in federal IT right now. Speed and agility.
Absolutely. It ensures the software being deployed is not only secure by design, satisfying the SSDF mandates, but also remains continuously secure in operation, satisfying CSCRM requirements and enabling the speed promised by Cato. Ties it all together.
Okay, this is fantastic. We've clearly established the need, the gap left by old tools, and the capability how Reversing Labs binary analysis fills that gap across those four pillars. But, you know, in the complex world of federal government, having the best technology means absolutely nothing if you can't actually get it bought and deployed. You have to navigate the acquisition maze. So we need to detail the map now. How do agencies actually get this solution? How do we get it into the hands of the people who desperately need it? And who, specifically, are those key decision makers we need to target?
Right. Capability without access is useless in federal. The single biggest accelerator for procurement, the thing that acts as the easy button for agencies, is the awardable status that Spectre Assure has achieved.
Awardable status. Okay, that sounds important, but also potentially like bureaucratic jargon. Can you break down what that actually means for a federal program manager or contracting officer who wants to buy this? Why is it an easy button?
It's a huge time and risk saver. Awardable status means the solution, Spectre Assure in this case, has already gone through a rigorous vetting and competitive evaluation process by specific DoD entities. Specifically, it's achieved these designations from the DoD Platform 1, P1 Solutions Marketplace, and the Chief Digital and AI Office's CDAO, Tradewinds Solutions Marketplace.
Okay, vetted by P1 and CDAO Tradewinds. What does that allow an agency buyer to do?
It essentially designates Spectre Assure as a post-competition vehicle. This is critical. Normally, when a federal agency identifies a need for new technology, they have to go through the full, often painful, Federal Acquisition Regulation, FAR, process. That means writing a detailed request for proposals, RFP, soliciting bids from multiple vendors, conducting lengthy technical evaluations and scoring, making an award, and then dealing with a mandatory period where losing vendors can protest the decision.
That whole process sounds like it takes forever.
It easily can. That standard FR competition cycle often takes 12 to 18 months or even longer. It completely paralyzes mission deployment while everyone waits for the procurement process to finish.
And the awardable status lets them bypass all that.
Largely, yes. Because the solution has already been competed and vetted against stringent DoD requirements through P1 or Tradewinds, it allows program executive offices, PEOs, and acquisition teams, especially within the DoD and the intelligence community, to essentially skip that lengthy, whiskey competition cycle for this specific capability. Instead of waiting 18 months, they can leverage this existing pre-approved vehicle to procure and deploy Spectra Assure in a matter of weeks. This aligns perfectly with the goals of initiatives like Software Fast Track, WFT, that are all about accelerating capability delivery.
So it's a pre-negotiated faster path to getting the tech.
Exactly. And this capability is also crucial for the channel partners who actually facilitate many of these federal transactions. Companies like Carahsoft, Norseman Defense Technologies, Mission First Cyber, and Vibrant. Their role is also to execute these low-friction marketplace transactions, making it even easier for the agency buyer. That awardable status is their key enabler.
Okay, that clarifies how the streamlined procurement vehicle. Now, let's zoom in on the who. You mentioned federal security decisions are often driven by the specific fears, responsibilities, and frankly, the personal liability of key individuals. Let's break down those key personas. Starting at the top, the executive holding perhaps the most personal risk, the authorizing official, AO.
The AO. This is the person, often a senior executive or flag officer, who has to formally sign the authorization to operate package. By signing, they are personally accepting the residual risk of operating that system. Their core pain point is absolutely personal liability and the perception of being a blocker. They often feel like they're seen as the primary obstacle to mission progress because they're the ones saying, not yet, or demanding more proof. And they know, deep down, especially after SolarWinds, that the static, incomplete data they often rely on, the paperwork, the vendor questionnaires, is fundamentally inadequate. It doesn't truly cover them or the mission if a sophisticated attack succeeds.
So the AO doesn't really trust the old system of proof, and they're right not to. They need something better to cover their risk. What's the specific message Reversing Labs needs to deliver to that AO to alleviate that fear and mitigate their personal risk?
The message has to speak directly to confidence and enabling speed, not blocking it. It should be something like, authorize with confidence, enable continuous ATO.
Yeah.
The pitch needs to center on providing independent automated verification. Stop basing your critical risk decisions on trust and static paperwork. We provide the automated continuous binary level verification you need. This high fidelity evidence stream integrated into your workflow gives you the confidence and the verifiable audit trail required to make faster, better risk decisions and grant that ongoing authorization for Cato. We help transform your office from a perceived bottleneck into the chief mission accelerator while actually reducing your personal exposure.
Okay, address the liability, enable the mission. Next persona, the Chief Information Security Officer, CSO. They're responsible for the overall enterprise security posture and meeting all those mandates we discussed. What keeps the federal CISO awake at night?
Oh, the CSO is under intense pressure from multiple directions. Their key pain points are massive third-party software exposure and overwhelming compliance burden. The CSO is personally on the hook for ensuring the agency complies with ARO 14028, M22-18, CSCRM, SSDF, you name it. They know their single biggest unmanaged risk is often the CIATS software they buy, where they have almost zero visibility today using traditional tools. And compounding all this, their security operations center, their SOC, is likely drowning in tool sprawl, too many security tools that don't work well together, and overwhelmed by alert fatigue, making effective proactive risk management nearly impossible.
So the CSO needs a way to get their arms around the third-party risk, prove compliance, and make their SOC more effective. They need consolidation and verification.
Precisely. The message for the CISO needs to be about consolidation and comprehensive verification. Consolidate your software assurance. Verify everything. The pitch goes something like, Reversing Labs provides the single platform you need to verify the integrity of every piece of software that enters your environment, whether you buy it, solving your CSCRM and third-party risk problem, or build it internally, meeting your SSDF requirements. Way this delivers the concrete, verifiable proof necessary for your mandatory OMB attestation reporting, significantly reducing your compliance headache and audit burden. Furthermore, our integrated intelligence suite will immediately improve your overall enterprise security posture by supercharging your SOC, enabling them to cut through the noise and decisively find the sophisticated malware your existing vulnerability scanners are completely missing.
Makes sense. Verify everything, simplify compliance, boost the SOC. Finally, the third key persona, the DevSecOps lead or the software factory director. These folks are measured on speed and delivery.
Yes, their world revolves around velocity. Their primary pain point is purely operational. Security correction kills velocity. They constantly battle the perception and often the reality that traditional security scanning tools, especially noisy SAST and SCA tools, introduce friction that slows down their development pipelines, hurting their key metrics for delivering capabilities quickly. They also often bear the heavy manual burden of generating all the compliance artifacts, the SBOMs, the risk reports, the vulnerability scans that the AO requires for the ATO CATO process. And they live in fear of their own pipeline being compromised, becoming the source of the next supply chain attack.
So the message to them has to be all about enabling speed, reducing their workload, and providing real security, not just noise.
It absolutely must. The message is, secure the binary, not just the code. Go faster. The pitch emphasizes being less disruptive. We're different. We don't flood your developers with thousands of low-priority alerts about theoretical source code flaws. We focus laser-sharp on real threats found in the final binary artifact-confirmed malware, evidence of tampering, critical, hard-coded secrets. By automating the generation of validated SBOMs and the continuous safe reports needed for CATO, we eliminate that painful manual compliance documentation burden. We integrate true security assurance seamlessly into your rapid delivery pipeline, helping you go faster, safer.
Okay, that's a really clear breakdown of the key personas and how to speak to their specific pains. Now, using this understanding, let's prioritize. Where should the focus be in terms of specific agency clusters and use cases? Let's start with the absolute top tier.
Tier 1 priority has to be the Department of Defense, DOD, and the intelligence community, I see. They're paramount for several reasons. The criticality of their missions, their significant investment in software factories and CATO, and crucially, their pre-approved procurement access via Platform One and Tradewinds, which removes major acquisition hurdles.
Within DOD-HC, who are the primary targets?
You target the big program executive offices, PEOs, folks like the Air Force's PEO Digital, Army's PEO, C3T, the organizations responsible for acquiring and managing complex high-value mission systems, weapon systems, command and control, ISR platforms. Their core use case is weapon system integrity, CSCRM. They absolutely must be able to verify the integrity of all the software components, especially COTs and GOTs, OSS, government off the shelf, going into those critical systems. The lead product here is Spectra Assure, focused on the buy-save pillar.
Okay, the buyers. What about the builders within DoD, the software factories?
Targeting the established software factories like Platform One itself, Kessel Run, Air Force, Army Software Factory, etc., is essential. Their core use case is CATO acceleration and pipeline security. These organizations are under immense pressure from leadership to deliver secure code to the warfighter faster than adversaries can adapt. Spectra Assure gets integrated as that final trusted quality and integrity gate in their CI/CD pipelines. It automates the generation of the CATO evidence artifacts they need and ensures the integrity of every build iteration. This is the build safe pillar in action.
And what about the vast ecosystem that supports the DoD, the Defense Industrial Base, the DIB?
The DIB is a critical extension. The driving force there is the rollout of the Cybersecurity Maturity Model Certification, CMMC 2.0. This mandate requires hundreds of thousands of defense contractors and subcontractors, large and small, to prove they have adequate security controls in place to protect sensitive government information, CUI. Spectra Assure provides the necessary technological evidence, particularly around software integrity verification and secure development practices, aligning with SSDF, that DIB companies need to meet certain CMMC 2.0 requirements. This makes it a critical sales channel, both selling directly to DIB companies and also through DoD PEOs, who will increasingly mandate their suppliers use such tools to validate the software they deliver.
And we shouldn't forget the most advanced cyber organizations within DoD-IC.
Definitely not. Organizations like U.S. Cyber Command, U.S. Cybercom, the Defense Cybercrime Center, DC3, the NSA, their use case is advanced nation-state malware analysis and threat hunting. For these elite teams, the full power of Spectra Analyze, the Deep Dive Workbench, and Spectra Intelligence, the massive data repository, is required. They're dealing with the most sophisticated adversaries and need the unparalleled depth of analysis and historical context Reversing Labs provides.
Okay, tier one. DoD's is clearly the top priority. Let's move to tier two priority.
Yeah.
Department of Homeland Security, DHS, and Department of Justice, DOJ. Why are they next?
Because of their direct mission alignment in two critical areas, critical infrastructure protection and law enforcement forensics. Within DHS, the key component to target is CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. Their core mission is critical infrastructure protection, CIP. CISA acts as the national risk advisor for the 16 designated critical infrastructure sectors, energy, finance, healthcare, etc. CISA needs capabilities like Spectra Assure to help vet the security of software used in these critical sectors, including CODOS products and especially operational technology, OKI components, used in industrial control systems. They can use it internally and recommend it to their partners.
And for the Department of Justice, DOJ, especially the FBI. You mentioned the forensics angle earlier.
Yes, for the DOJ, particularly the FBI's digital forensics labs and cyber units. The primary use case is private digital forensics. And here, we have to reemphasize the unique strength of Spectra Analyze's privacy feature and its ability to be deployed on-premise and air-gapped. As we discussed, federal law enforcement cannot upload sensitive evidentiary files to the cloud. Spectra Analyze provides them with that necessary, private, powerful malware analysis workbench, fulfilling a non-negotiable legal and operational requirement. This capability is often the key differentiator that unlocks their ability to adopt advanced analysis tools for digital evidence.
Got it. Privacy is the enabler for DOJ FBI. Finally, Tier 3 priority, civilian critical infrastructure agencies, high consequence, high visibility sectors.
Right. This includes large civilian agencies managing critical functions where system failure has direct, significant impacts on public safety, health, or the economy. Key targets here include the Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, particularly the FDA and CMS, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Their use case is vetting medical device software and protecting patient data, PHI. The FDA now explicitly requires SBOMs for new medical device submissions. Spectra Assure is the perfect tool to go beyond the SBOM and actually verify the integrity of that device software, detecting hidden malware or tampering before it gets deployed in hospitals and potentially harms patients or violates HAP.
That's a compelling use case. What about energy?
The Department of Energy, DOE, and its associated national laboratories. Their primary use case is operational technology, OT, SCADA security. Protecting the nation's energy grid and securing unique, often legacy industrial control systems is paramount. They face huge challenges patching and updating these sensitive OT systems. Spectra Assure can be used to validate the integrity and safety of software patches and firmware updates for those critical control systems before they get deployed, mitigating the risk of potentially catastrophic cyber-physical attacks.
And any others in Tier 3?
Yes. You also have agencies like the Department of Transportation, DOT, securing transportation systems, and large public-facing agencies like the General Services Administration, GSA, the Veterans Affairs, VA, or the Social Security Administration, SSA. Their use case is often securing public-facing digital services and managing large portfolios of COTs and SAW software. They need centralized, high-volume software intake vetting and continuous evaluation like Spectra Assure provides to secure their digital transformation efforts and protect citizen data.
So it's a really comprehensive strategy. Tier 1 for speed and critical defense via DOTPU. Tier 2 for specialized forensics and infrastructure via DHS-DOJ. And Tier 3 for broad civilian safety and services.
Exactly. By strategically targeting these three peers with tailored use cases and messaging, Reversing Labs can systematically address the entire spectrum of federal mission assurance needs driven by the current mandates. So, Mel, when you pull it all together, what we've really established today is that the Reversing Labs platform represents a fundamental shift. It changes the very definition of what security assurance means in the federal government context. It's not just, you know, another security tool adding to the bloat. It really is that essential binary assurance layer. It's the technology that finally allows federal agencies to move definitively beyond just basic vulnerability checking, beyond checkbox compliance with SVAM mandates.
And actually implement that core zero trust principle, verify, never trust, at the most critical point of vulnerability, the software itself, the binary that actually runs.
Exactly. It provides that objective, verifiable evidence, the ground truth, as they call it, that agencies absolutely need to meet the sweeping mandates of EO 14028 and OMB M2218. It directly addresses the systemic failure, the blind spot, that the SolarWinds compromise so painfully exposed.
And just to quickly recap the strategic offering for anyone listening, Spectra Assure is really the core solution. It's the linchpin for meeting the mandates driving SSDF adherence, generating validated SBOMs, enabling secure acquisition by safe, securing pipelines, build safe, and critically accelerating continuous ATO.
Right. And then Spectra Detect, Spectra Analyze, and Spectra Intelligence form the necessary supporting suite. They provide the capabilities needed for high-volume operational monitoring, stay safe, accelerating SOC response times, and conducting that specialized, high-stakes, often private analysis required by law enforcement and forensics teams.
The final unified message, then, it seems, is that Reversing Labs provides the verifiable binary-level evidence necessary for agencies to transition from a reactive, vulnerability-focused posture to a truly proactive secure-by-design and secure-in-operations stance.
And crucially, by automating this deep binary assurance, it allows the federal government to finally accelerate, not hinder, its speed to mission. Whether that mission is protecting sensitive citizen data, securing the national power grid, or fielding advanced new weapon systems to deter adversaries, security becomes an enabler, not a blocker.
That's a powerful takeaway. But, you know, as we look ahead, this raises maybe one final provocative thought, doesn't it? We focus heavily today on traditional software, COSTES, JOTS, compiled code binaries. But the entire federal landscape, especially DOD and the IC, is racing towards integrating much more advanced capabilities. Things like artificial intelligence and machine learning AML models directly into critical operational systems, into decision-making processes.
That's absolutely the next wave. And it completely changes the nature of the software supply chain, doesn't it? The components are no longer just code libraries.
Right. So the provocative thought for you, the listener, is this. If the traditional tools we've discussed today are fundamentally blind to malicious tampering inserted during the build process of even a relatively simple software package,
then how truly secure can these incredibly complex, often opaque, foundational AML models be? Models being developed and deployed right now across the DoD and IC, potentially influencing critical decisions.
These models are often proprietary neural networks trained on massive, potentially sensitive data sets. They aren't simple binaries. What does the final exam even look like for an extended bill of materials, an XBOM, as some are calling it, when the critical components aren't just Java libraries, but proprietary model files, H5.pt, configuration files, and the training data itself?
That need for continuous integrity validation of these complex non-source code artifacts, ensuring the AI model itself hasn't been maliciously poisoned during training or tampered with after deployment to introduce bias or backdoors, that is surely the next frontier of software supply chain assurance.
And it seems like solving that challenge will fundamentally require the same kind of deep binary level analysis expertise we've been discussing today, just applied to these new, even more complex artifacts.
It's a critical question for the future of secure mission enablement.
It certainly is, a chilling and necessary thought to end on. If you can't verify the integrity of the binary or the model file, you certainly can't trust the outcome of the algorithm, especially when national security or even leaves might depend on it. Tommy, this has been incredibly insightful. Thank you so much for guiding us through this extremely detailed and absolutely essential deep dive into the federal security landscape and the role of binary assurance.
It was a real pleasure, Mel. As you said, the stakes for the agencies wrestling with these challenges couldn't possibly be higher.
Indeed. And thank you, our listeners, for joining us on the deep dive. We hope this has given you the granular details and the strategic context you need to understand the critical shift happening right now in federal software assurance. We'll see you next time.